Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is our first program in our The Food Revolution Papers series. We're going to be exploring the politics surrounding food. Believe it or not, there's a huge amount of politics in something as even as simple as a Big Mac, fries, and a supersized soda. Joining me in this political quest are my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Simon.
Morning, Simon.
I was joking with my wife, Jan, last night. I explained to her that I had finally hit rock bottom. I had sunk to the all-time low, the Mariana Trench of the news business. I was going to talk about politics.
That is definitely the deep blue sea of commentary.
And I always avoid politics, so.
But, you know, Simon, we don't have any choice. And I made a couple notes I'd like to read to our listeners. So yesterday, June 15th, outgoing Secretary of Defense Robert Gates said to Congress, "All governments lie to each other." What he should have said is that all governments and big business lie to each other and to their citizens and consumers in our country. Since our government and big business find it so easy to lie to us, it's our duty to sniff out these lies and expose them for what they are, the politics of food and the politics of greed. Behind every food getting to the market is a political story. So today's show, we're going to include the news that the industry would prefer you not hear, see, or read. That kind of news includes recalls of food. So we're going to try and let you know what brands and what foods to avoid in the market, because all of these recalls should be on the front page of your newspaper and on the evening news, but you never see them. And when you hear the pounds and the amount that's recalled, I think it's shocking. And on today's topic, we're going to talk about the partnership between the FDA, USDA, Monsanto, DuPont, and other big food companies. But first, the news of the week. Ashley, you got something special for us today?
Do you want to talk about the recalls? Or?
Oh, you jump in.
Well, actually, I have something exciting I'd like to talk about before the recalls, which is about the House moves to ban GMO salmon in the agriculture debates, and it's continuing right now. So that was good news. The measure passed the Republican-controlled House by voice vote, and that's, again, the Frankenfish salmon. Members of Congress from several key salmon states, or both sides of the aisle actually, have now signed onto the bills to block the salmon. The Senate has not yet voted on the matter. So we're hoping that this bill, you know, they are able to stop the frankenfish. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, they use a gene to make it grow faster, be bigger, be badder than any other, that's such a word, isn't it? Be badder than any other salmon and fish out there, and they gobble each other up. So it's a very dangerous fish, and there is just no human testing done on it. It's kind of an alien fish. So that was the good news for yesterday, June 16th.
You know, we should have played Michael Jackson's Bad to this, you know? You know, imagine a GMO salmon, a Franken salmon, as big as they are, with that kind of red-cut jacket and one fin with a white glove, and you get a feeling for all of this.
I think to put it into a perspective here for our listeners, the plan was to keep these salmon in fish farms, and the genetic modification meant that the salmon was in a continual growth mode, so it ate everything it could lay its fins on.
Including
right, and you know, obviously, it was only going to be a matter of time before a fish farm had a problem, and a couple of these salmon would make it into the wilds, And guess what, folks? Now you've got an ecological disaster.
Yeah, it sounds like the movie Deep Blue Sea, but with the, you know, with Franken salmon instead.
And I do hope that they are able to completely stop it. I mean, completely ban the GMO or GE salmon. This genetic engineering of animals, it's very dangerous, again, because there's really no human testing. They can't test it on human beings, so there's no way to know how it's going to respond within you. And we've already seen with the statistical changes and increase in diseases in the United States across the board since the 90s till now with genetically engineered crops. So we can just imagine what will happen with the food.
Yeah, well, you know, I belong to that group that really doesn't want to look at my food scowling back at me. And I don't feel like I really want to eat Frankenstein's monster either. And, you know,
one potential, good side effect would be that we might well produce the world's greatest Olympic swimmers.
I can just imagine that. You know, you take a look at all the different things that can go on with this kind of fish. You can imagine playing the Jaws theme when they break out, you know, and to me, everything in nature, I mean, you look at Alcatraz, you know, they couldn't even keep everybody in Alcatraz. There were two successful escapes from Alcatraz, and yet that was supposedly something that was, you know, you couldn't get out of. And I think that nature finds a way for everything to escape. You can't lock anything up in perpetuity.
And I also think that I was going to touch on the recalls, and maybe we can come back to that later, Mandy, but I think it's a good point at this point maybe to go into some of the ghostwriting.
Well, let's come back to ghostwriting. If you want to go into recalls, do recalls, because once you start ghostwriting, you won't come back.
Because I was going to do that as to how we got the salmon where it is, but let's do recalls. Okay. Yesterday, we had a recall, or June 15th, we had a recall from Augusta, Georgia factory of Kellogg's. It makes many of its baked products of Keebler, Famous Amos, Murray Cookies, as well as Kashi and a Mother's Brand products. The plant was also growing Listeria, a bacteria that can cause serious illness and sometimes death. In February, when USDA had inspected the Augusta bakery, the employees were more than 500. FDA did environmental sampling that came back positive for Listeria on 15 locations, including some food contact surfaces. So there's a warning out to them, and I guess that the warning goes to them, and you get to keep the cookies. So if I were anybody out there, I would really be very cautious of the Kellogg, Keebler, Famous Amos, and Murray cookies, as well as Kashi and Mother's Brand products right now, just because the warning's gone out, and they found Listeria in the factories.
So did you see any of that on the news, Simon?
No, I must have missed it.
I venture to guess everyone else.
Just to clarify that, you said Kashi. Is that the, the breakfast cereal?
I think it is K-A-S-H-I. I think that is the cereal, correct, Kashi?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, the Golean, that product that they keep pushing on television.
Yeah, we don't see any of it here in Los Angeles, so it's sort of a foreign brand to us. And I don't know, maybe they're afraid to sell it here. I'm not quite sure yet, but sometimes that's a problem too.
So apparently what the FDA is doing is they're going in and they're issuing people a warning. And they'll say, we found Listeria here, 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 and here within your plant, and now there's a warning. And then, but they haven't pulled any of this product, but they found Listeria at the plant. Now, as far as Salmonella was found in an Ohio egg house, which is the top 60 egg producer of the West Mansfield, Ohio-based Nature Pure, was, in the Egg Industries magazine annual list of the 60 egg producers were, based Nature Pure was not the biggest. It was the smallest with 200,000 laying eggs, but it has come in for an early inspection under the new shell egg regulations that went into effect last summer. So since the Iowa problem. They are now doing early inspections and surprising people. And they found at the plant that all three of the environmental samples taken at this plant by the FDA was found positive for salmonella. This was May 27th, in which they issued a warning. Now, we're just hearing about this June 14th. So they give a warning, and then they'll go back and inspect again, but they found salmonella in the eggs in the plant, and, of course, nothing was pulled.
Wow, I hadn't heard of that one either, have you?
But, oh, this one really got me, though. The Denver food plant gets a warning letter also on June 16th. They found a rodent problem and labeling errors cited in an inspection report by the U.S. FDA after it visited this ADAO, which is double cheese stack sandwiches, grilled chicken and provolone cheese sandwiches, Mediterranean mandarin oranges salad items. They also found misbranding with allergens in them, and within the conditions they caused products, there is to be adulteration within the packaging of the food. Warnings were given out May 6th. We're first hearing about it June 16th. So, I mean, I just find this all very interesting because it's interesting that they go in, they give a warning, and this is what's going on in the plant, and I may have this food at home. There was a huge, long list of recalls. I would suggest people go into the foodsafety.com and look at these articles and look at what current event is happening with the food. When you go to the FDA to try to find the recalls, the difficulty with that, Simon, I'm finding is I hit FDA recalls. I went to dog and cat and pets. And trying to find the food recalls was a different, completely different experience to find a list of what was actually recalled. And there were plenty of recalls with Listeria found in some vegan food on June 16th in a California company. Warning letters were sent out. Listeria for Stilton cheese recall. E. coli strains were found. I can't even find what it was found in.
And, you know, honey, getting away from that moment, these are just an example of what we're going to do every week. And what I find alarming is this is just last week's. You know, this isn't like a summary for a month or something.
No, the month summary is on the floor right now, and Simon, you'd be laughing your head off. It goes into the kitchen right now. I mean, the month, you know, from the recalls are just, and people, please be very cautious with your animals. They're finding with the factory farm consistently, this has been consistent since January, factory farm pig ear chews that they give to dogs for chewing on have had problems with various foodborne illnesses and are on constant recall. So that's something to be careful with the animals, too, with your pets.
You know, for some reason, I'm not crazy about, of course, we have cats, but I'm not crazy if I had a dog or watching them walk around the yard chewing on a pig's ear. I don't know why that doesn't sound inviting to me because I'm...
Oh, it must be big, though, Manny, for to have so many recalls and warnings. And, of course, it's factory farm pigs, so what can you expect?
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
Okay, there's one thing I want to go back on just to clarify in my own mind. I would have thought, you know, as a consumer, if I wanted to find out, you know, what the problems were, you know, the recalls of the week or the month, it should be right there, easy to find on the FDA site. But you're leading me to believe that you kind of have to jump through a couple of hoops to get this information out of the FDA.
Well, you know, last night, Manny was...
More than a couple.
Manny was upset with me because I was up really, really late last night. I was so frustrated. I went, I'm not giving up till I find the answer. I went back into the FDA, and I kept saying, you know, this has to have a trail. Well, then they'd say, E. coli, you know, pulled such and such a date, and you'd go to find what the brand was, and there was no brand. I'd hit the button, and there'd be a dark page, and it would not tell me who the brand or the maker was or where I could find this particular recall. So to inform people, to let them know, I just think, you know, I know when I was in Europe, in England, they had a whole program that they would list recalls on the air. And they would recalls, drug problems, whatever it was. They had a little segment on their news every day that they did this. And I think they should do that in this country for safety of people. But you're right, Simon. I absolutely tried to follow the trail, and I couldn't come up with the answer. So if some listener out there has a better way of finding it, please call in. Please let us know so we can keep people informed and to help people.
Yeah, right.
No, seriously.
No, I mean, a better way to get in inside of the FDA. I've been researching inside the FDA for approximately 7 years on our various books and things. It's like trying to mine in underground at 1,000 feet where everything is difficult to do.
And it was USDA, too. I mean, it was very difficult. I couldn't find, I would have, this was a recall, this is the date, and no product.
Yeah, it's pretty clear they don't want you to find this information easily. And they really work very, very hard in stopping you. Which gets me to one other subject before we get back to that. Is this is a milestone. You know, California's been waging war on obesity of children in schools. And a number of well-known local chefs from Wolfgang Puck down to, I forget the name of Jimmy Kimmel, had Jamie Oliver, who's a famous chef activist on. And they've all pushed all of this. And what they're trying to do is push all these loaded drinks, loaded with sugar and carbs out of school. So finally, Los Angeles followed San Francisco, and they eliminated this chocolate drink and strawberry drinks from the school cafeterias. And it was funny, the news even cheesed it on that. They tried to compare 8 ounces of strawberry milk to 8 ounces of Coca-Cola to reduce the amount of sugar and calories. But everyone knows that Coca-Cola comes in a 12-ounce can, or you get a 12 to 16-ounce paper cup, and if you want to supersize me, you have to run 28. They said, well, you know, Coke has 28 grams of sugar in it, an 8-ounce glass. Well, a can actually has 39 or 40, and what they don't say is it has another 39 or 40 from high fructose corn syrup. So they compared the chocolate drink to it, so they show a 16-ounce pint container they sell in the schools, but they measure the 8 ounces or get 8 ounces of Coke. So any kid who gets that full bottle of, plastic carton of, chocolate milk or strawberry milk is actually getting somewhere around 56 grams of sugar and another 50 grams from the high fructose corn syrup. So we're really talking about 100 grams of sugar at lunch for these kids on one of those drinks, and maybe 80 grams to have a regular Coke. And regular Coke is also being banned from the schools. They banned corn dogs and all sorts of other delightful things to make your child look like a full-grown potato. And, you know, so this is a big step in California, and it's just a matter of time before every school in California bans junk food. They removed vending machines and other things to provide all these various things in school. Candy bar machines have been removed. And it's a giant step forward to improving the health of our nation. But can you imagine the politics it took to get these out of schools? There were public hearings. There were maybe 5 or 6 of them. There were, you know, the manufacturers showed up and talked about how healthy their drinks were. I'm surprised people didn't fall over in the aisles when they started saying, oh, our chocolate milk drink is really healthy for your child. You know, they can burn up 100 and some calories of sugar in study hall afterwards.
Is that on that pretty little plate that was just created?
Yeah. Yeah. What I now call the food plate the spam plate. Because if you look at that photo, I swear it's a cut piece of spam, Simon.
It certainly could be. I like my spam battered and deep fried.
Oh, I've never tried that before.
That's so gross.
Does that glow in the dark?
I'll tell you what, you need a nap afterwards.
I'll bet you do. Yeah, and the last one, which we've all talked about, is yesterday they released the massive study that showed the reduced life expectancy of women in the United States. So I turned on the news last night because I was dying to see the spin the nightly news put on it, because we all know the source of all this problem is obesity. People are dying because they're obese. They're dying because the effects of kidney, liver, and other diseases, transplants, all of this relate back to the food. It's back to our simple principle. Garbage in, and instead of garbage out, you just fall over and die. So, yeah, same way your computer does. You always say garbage in, garbage out, but now if you pollute your computer, those exec files can make a mess of it. Well, we, you know, as we contend in all our blogs and on our Saturday show, it's the food that's making people ill. So, Simon, we looked at all these last night. We couldn't find one comment about food except people eat too much. And they roamed around and showed the everybody who was grossly overweight. They settled down in a small town in northern Orlando where people said, you know, I mean, they're 100 pounds of weight going, oh, yeah, I like my fried southern food and I don't do any exercise. And I've lived on fast food for years. And you look at them going, I'm surprised they're making 70. And the fact, it's our position, the next generation won't make 70, right, Ash?
Absolutely.
So you have any thoughts about what you saw last night, this whole hoax of trying to blame people for eating too much?
Well, it gets back to what we talk about, and it's not your fault, how the food is packed full of hidden MSG and packed full of soy. And, oh, Simon, we'll get into soy and how it got passed. And how it's hidden in all the food, and it causes hormone disruption, it causes thyroid problems, it causes people to put weight on, they become diabetic from the actual eating of this food, and they can't stop eating because their brain is tricked into eating more and more and more and more and more from the hidden MSG. In fact, they use some of this product when they're testing on mice, and the mice will become obese.
Well,
or they found them. I'm sorry. They fatten the mice up on these products, so
oh,
they
yeah.
can test to see how to go eliminate
right.
the obesity.
Well, that's the point. You, all these fat test rats they work on, they're fed MSG to make them fat, and then they turn around and they put MSG in 90% of the packaged foods you eat. So, gee, I wonder why people are getting overweight. But the telling stat, Simon, is they said the backsliding for women began slowly in 1997. But it accelerated in the last decade. Gee.
So I looked the stats up.
Well, before you start the stats, isn't that when genetically engineered seeds started and the GMO wheat and soy and all these things started hitting the market, which coincidentally is when people start getting fatter. So Ashley did some research, and she had some stats for us, so nice and slow.
Okay. In 1994, almost all states had prevalence of obesity less than 18%. In 2000, only 13 states had a prevalence less than 18%. 11 states exceeded 22%.
What does that mean?
It means from 1994, they had this, you know, didn't have as prevalent in 50 states of obesity. And as of 2000, exactly what you're saying, Manny, it's an increase. I guess I don't need these stats.
Well, you know, and it's funny because then they blame this, quote, grim trend is fueled largely by smoking. I thought smoking was an all-time low in the United States. Last time I saw the stats, less than 15% of the United States were smoking, when in my youth it was about 80% of the United States smoked cigarettes. And then they say smoking and high blood pressure, if smoking is leading to high blood pressure. No, it's a poor diet, the proliferation of horrible drugs that aren't tested, and fast foods that are causing this. And then they list the last one, obesity. Okay, seems to me we're right back at food, right?
And they're saying the obesity is causing the diabetes. And in the United States, economically, the economic cost of diabetes in 2007, $174 billion. Of this amount, $116 billion was due to direct medical costs, $58 billion due to indirect costs such as loss of work and restricted activity, and disability due to diabetes. So one leads to the other leads to the other. Approximately $1 of $5 health care dollars in the United States is spent caring for someone diagnosed with diabetes, secondary to obesity, okay, while approximately $1 out of 10 health care dollars is attributed to diabetes. So,
well, and then I got to come back to this. The same guy who's speaking in this government article makes this bold statement that's hard to agree with. He said American women historically smoke more heavily than women in other countries. I mean, where does he base that on? First, and he says particularly around World War II. Okay, I'd like to see his China stats on people smoking cigarettes during World War II? Or how about how many cigarettes the Japanese smoked during World War II? I'm sure there are plenty of stats on that. I find these statistical comparisons absolutely absurd. And if people didn't smoke a lot of cigarettes in Japan and China and the rest of them, it was because the United States weren't importing them to Japan during World War II. Duh, why weren't we importing cigarettes to Japan in World War II, right, Simon?
Right. I'll tell you what, I hate to break the flow here, but I've been sat just seething over the FDA website and this business over recalls. So I want to ask a really simple but loaded to the hilt question. Why are they operating the way they are? It would be so simple to be up front. Is this are they just truly inept, or are they doing this on purpose to obscure the information?
Well, let me start. Well, it started early, and in our books, particularly Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula and the Arthritis, Inflammation, Gout, Crohn's, IBD books, we chronicle the history of the FDA. And in our new book, The Food Revolution Papers, we'll also chronicle part of it. But it started seriously about 1992 when Vice President Dan Quayle introduced the FDA's final policy on genetically modified biotech products in support of Monsanto. He referred to it as, quote, regulatory relief for the industry. So allowing them to sell adulterated foods to Americans was regulatory relief. At the same time, the FDA acknowledged that its policy was to foster U.S. biotechnology. So basically, the FDA and our government's position is to foster business and foster biotechnology, not to protect citizens. And as time went on, and if you research this, you will find that FDA is in partnership, or the United States government literally is in partnership with Monsanto and others, and owns part of the very biotech patents that we're all objecting to. And you will notice, and people can see that in a lawsuit filed in San Francisco over the alfalfa, that they had to name the United States government because we're part patent holder, which meant the United States government provided a U.S. attorney out of the Justice Department to defend Monsanto and its biotech alfalfa product, which is a genetically engineered seed. And by the way, only 5% of alfalfa requires any kind of pesticide because pests, I guess, are holding out for better food like wheat and soy. So there's really not even any use for a biotech seed in that area. But our government pushed it, which raises a question that Ashley and I are going to put into blog, is that as this appeals goes to the appeals court, we're going to find the Solicitor General of the United States of America appearing before the Supreme Court, arguing on behalf of Monsanto and the biotech genetically engineered seeds as opposed to standing up for our citizens. And they'll be arguing it in front of a 9-member United States Supreme Court, of which 2 members, Justice Thomas and Justice Kagan, are former lawyers for Monsanto. So let me see. You're going to have the government supporting Monsanto in a trial where 2 of the judges are former Monsanto lawyers. I mean, how can any citizen stand up to that? That's the first question. Now, that's the historical side. And Ashley, you wanted to add something in there about the United States and the Corn Refiners Association.
Oh, okay.
Because what happens is they're also fostering a lot of these associations. And Simon, this one's for you.
Okay, first of all, I was looking at the USDA in-house research team, and it's the United States Department of Agriculture Research Service. That's what it's called. And what they do is they go after partners. And I'm going to read right from their description of how excited they are to go spend our tax dollar. They continually look for opportunities to partner with business, other federal agencies, state and local governments, and universities. These partnerships, USDA, are designed to augment research programs, expedite research results to the private sector, exchange information and knowledge, stimulate new business economic development, enhance the U.S. trade, preserve the environment, and improve the quality of life for Americans. So then I started going through saying...
Well, wait a minute. Let's simplify that. Basically, our government, the FDA, is saying that we're in bed with business. And before you come back, Ash, I want to add something. And those people who say, oh, you're blaming the Bush administration. Well, the Obama administration, like the Bush and Clinton administrations before them, have literally become a revolving door for Monsanto employees of taking positions in there. So when you're done with this, Ash, I'll come back to the positions.
So there's licensing and technology, and they have all this sort of thing through the whole partnership at the USDA, braggadociously about partnering opportunities, you know. Come, will it, and wait till you see how they get this, get yourself approved. This is a whole different thing. So I started going through what are some of the things that they have approved. One, let's go to corn. Now, this one's for you, Simon. Mm. Making more corn sugar. Are you there, Simon? USDA, corn sugar, or glucose, was once a possible substitute for cane sugar. But known methods for converting cornstarch to glucose either cost too much or produce too little sugar. Screening fungi in a fungus collection housed in Peoria, Illinois, turned up a superior strain of Aspergillus. When combined with an improved growth medium, this strain enabled the agricultural research science, USDA scientists, to increase production of glucoamylase, the enzyme that converts cornstarch to glucose. Now, I believe that's synthetic, right, Manny?
Yes.
As a result, the corn processing industry could meet increased demand for corn sugar without costly expansion of facilities. And it goes on from there.
Well, what did they create to do this, honey?
Corn sugar. It's corn sugar. It's high fructose corn syrup. Isn't that high fructose corn syrup? Simon, isn't that high fructose corn syrup?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry. Am I a little slow here?
Well, but my question was, did they help create any organizations or anyone to implement this?
There's no, you know, it goes on to say, the enzyme research resulted in a technique later adopted and modified by industry for production of high fructose corn syrups. Syrup now sweetens hundreds of products, including many fruit drinks and particularly every soft drink. This is in the USDA Agricultural Research Center.
So basically, Simon, they helped found your favorite group, corn refiners.
Corn Refiners Association.
How's that make your morning, huh?
Oh, man. We're in the wrong business. We should be growing corn.
Oh, I thought you meant we should be in the lies and deception business.
And so, you know how we were talking about how soy is really bad for you and it's really, you know, not good for you because it's a hormone disruptor and it, you know, causes thyroid cancer. And there's all these things where you're generally accepted as safe. None of your scientists will sign off on soy as safe. Okay, it's a cardboard binder. In the USDA Agricultural Research Service, it states soybean oil is number one. 50 years ago, soybean oil tasted like paint. Today, it is tasteless and odor-free and accounts for 75% of the vegetable oil sold in the United States. It is used in salad dressings, granola bars, to fry potato chips, french fries, and in 101 other products. It is in many non-food products, from printer ink to caulking compounds to lipstick. Further, after soybean oil is pressed from the bean, the remaining soybean meal is a valuable animal feed. So I guess when you're not caulking with it, you could feed your animals. Most of the research that made soy oil palatable was carried out at the ARS, Agricultural Research Science Lab in Peoria, USDA. A number of reasons were found for its unpleasant taste and smell, including trace metals from iron processing equipment and a linoleic acid, a fatty acid naturally present in soybean oil. Equipment was replaced with stainless steel, and they reprocessed and inhibited oxidation of the linoleic acid. The noses and tongues of many of the ARS employees have been enlisted over the years to evaluate soy oil, both heated and unheated, and this has been a 20 years of experience in oil sniffing. That one, Simon.
Well, you know, I'd love to read the resume. You know, current occupation, oil sniffer.
I'm going to behave myself on that one. But you know, people ask me, how does this come about? I mean, how do people do this? Well, it's really simple. Let's go through some of the people who run the USDA and the FDA. Obama made former Governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, who is known as a pro-biotech Monsanto guy, Secretary of the USDA. Let me see, USDA Monsanto. Oh, wonderful. And then they proceeded to take Michael Taylor, who was the Deputy Commissioner of Foods Deputy Commissioner of the FDA in the 1990s, who's responsible for having genetically modified foods passed, and he also was responsible for pushing through RBGH, which is a bovine growth hormone that they give to cows to make them look like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator. And then he left and went back to his assignment for Monsanto and got paid for a number of years as vice president of public policy at a substantial increase in pay. I mean, he probably went from a $200,000 a year job to $2 million a year job at Monsanto. So what happens? Obama reappoints this guy as FDA Deputy Commissioner of Foods. Okay? I mean, how bad can it get? And at the same time, you got to take a look at some of these other people. You know, basically Obama appointed a guy named Robert Beachy. He's a former director of Monsanto's funded Danforth Plant Science Center. He's now the director of the USDA's National Institute in Food and Agriculture. Let me see, you put a Monsanto into an agency that's supposed to govern them and monitor them, so what? They call up his buddy and say, hey, I did a little search of the plant today. Did you enjoy it? Yeah, let's play golf next week. That's what happens. So every time I think it's over, about a week ago, Congress approved Izzy, known as Islam Siddique, who's the vice president of Monsanto and DuPont's lobbying group, CropLife, which has a despicable reputation because they promote pesticides. They made him the agriculture negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative.
Didn't that just happen, Manny?
Yeah, it was approved last week.
I see a pattern here, okay? Right after Tom Vilsack got in, June 23rd, 2009, we have this. Tom Vilsack gave $40 million in funding to Fiora Agricultural Lab. Let's see, on June 7th, we also have $50 million being given to the pest people at the USDA funding. So one person gets in, and then there's all this funding going. Isn't that kind of a...
Well, not only is that bad, but this is Siddique is our official U.S. trade negotiator with countries like Europe. Well, think about it. Here we got a guy who's a Monsanto guy who pushes GMO foods, negotiating in Europe for exports and trade exchange. And in Europe, GMO foods are not only banned, but Monsanto looks like Darth Vader there. They are just the ugliest corporation to every, you know, person I've talked to in Europe. I talked to a friend of mine yesterday who runs TV stations in Eastern Europe and is involved in a wide variety of this. And when I mentioned the word Monsanto, I could hear his teeth grind. And he went off on Monsanto for 5 minutes about how people here just, they mentioned Monsanto, and they get 5,000 people marching. So we appointed a Monsanto employee to help us with our foreign trade deficit problems. How is that going to help this country? Especially since Monsanto, with the help of the government, got caught by WikiLeaks pressuring French and Spanish governments to do more GMOs. So how's that going to work politically? And I'm going to add one more. Rajiv Shah is a former agriculture development director for the Gates Foundation, which is a partner of Monsanto. He served as Obama's USDA Undersecretary for Research, Education, Economics, and as chief scientist. And he's now ahead of the U.S. Agriculture Informational Department. So let's talk about what that means. We've, as some of our listeners may know, we've had a number of Iowa farmers on, Dr. Francis Tickey, Jim Rubis, and others from places like Jefferson County who oppose all of this as much as we do. And we all seem to be grading on one issue. You know, people talk about grants. So what happens is Monsanto says, we made a $250,000 grant to Iowa State University for education without even discussing what the ties on it. Well, they take that, go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and they get a matching grant.
Partners.
So they're partners. So basically, this matching grant, when you hear the term all the time, matching grants, what does it mean? That means the United States government has forked over an equal amount of money with a private investor to do a study. So when they say, oh, this study is funded by the U.S. government and independent donations, they're talking about Monsanto and our government funding a survey that is basically says the same thing. And worse than that, most of these are ghostwritten. But before we get into ghostwriting and how this comes about, after the show, if our listeners want to read more about it, they can go to Blogger Newsnet and look up Politics Dominate the FDA and USDA, putting customer interests
consumer
aside,
interest, yeah.
Or consumer interests aside, and read our blog on this, which names names and lays out who some of these people are. So, Ashley, tell us about how these granted and research projects are done and basically ghostwritten. And, you know, and if not, I'll let me give you a little introduction to it. There's a lady named Adrienne Few Berman, an extraordinarily gifted lady who is an expert witness who works for Georgetown University. And she's written a variety of articles. The most important one is called The Haunting of Medical Journals, How Ghostwriting Sold HRT, which are these hormones for women. And she's been an expert women in all these various lawsuits against the drug companies, particularly Wyeth, for selling these hormones that cause women a huge amount or a huge increase in breast cancer. She directs the Farmed Out Unit at Georgetown University, which is a project funded with public money, and basically they follow up on these issues. So I know Ashley's had a chance to read this. It's a 1,500-page article. You can find it online. But we're going to highlight some of those issues. You want to jump in, honey, or...?
The first thing I wanted to say, though, before starting with the ghostwriters, is that you go, so what, the ghostwriters? So somebody writes it, so what? The problem is this. The medical knowledge that your doctor relies on and the medical field relies on, even myself, goes into the nursing journals, goes into things that I'm reading on a regular basis, are based on these articles. And one of the concerns that's going on is that, and it has been going on, and it's still going on. I thought it was going to be stopped after this lawsuit had occurred with the ghostwriting, but it's still going on right now. So doctors are reading this in their journals, and they're reading articles that are written by ghostwriters who are part of an industry that pays the industry, is paid by the industry to write these articles.
Well, to give you some idea, there's a company called DesignRight. And Ashley went to the website, and it's also in their report. For over 12 years, DesignRight, according to their own website, quote, planned, created, and or managed hundreds of advisory boards, wrote 1,000 abstracts and posters, 500 clinical papers, over 10,000 speaker bureau programs, over 200 satellite symposia, 60 international programs, dozens of websites, and a broad array of ancillary printed and electronic materials for drug companies. When you look at this, gee, you would think that's more than we're out in the market, or else it's some huge line percent. So basically speaking, every speaker is putting out a program designed by a drug company. And food companies, too, because most food companies are drug companies. And so every time you see one of these, you know, the nutrition advisory board says, eat, you know, genetically modified beef. Well, that's because they're paid to say it. So every time you hear one of these guys on the news saying, we have a study of such and such, you have to ask yourself, who paid for that study? And what was the purpose of the study? So And I'm going to just say one more, and Ash, you can come back to it. Said, what the study goes into is between 1997 and 2003, design rights output for Wyeth Labs on just the Premarin family of products, which are female hormones that we now know lead to breast cancer, they published over 50 peer-reviewed publications, more than 50 scientific abstracts and posters, journal supplements, internal white papers, slide kits, and other symposiums. So in essence, all of the marketing material used to sell Premarin hormones to women were basically false, created by Wyeth to sell their goods. Isn't that a horrible thought?
It is a horrible thought because, first I want to go back on abstract because so people understand what abstract is. This is what's in your medical journals. And many doctors rely on and completely trust the medical journals and what's being published per peer review. And so they don't have time to go read the entire, sometimes they don't have time to go in and read the entire study because it may be a long study and they are very, very busy. So an abstract is actually a summary paragraph which is included in each medical study published. It's supposed to give the reader a quick overview of the study results, and this is where the problem is with what's going on, is that these abstracts may or may not reflect the actual results of a study. In many cases, especially when expensive drugs are involved, the study abstract may give a summary that is the opposite of the actual results, which is what you're going to get into right now with what happened with the ghostwriting with Wyeth.
Well, yeah, well, I think the most important comment about them, one of the Wyeth employees goes like this, quote, "You just can't put another name on the article, but you can plagiarize the way we did when we wrote papers in college. What you need to do is give your potential authors a version of the article and modify it." I mean, come on. I mean, plagiarize your way through college? How can someone even admit that? If I plagiarized an article, I probably would have jumped off a bridge. I would have been embarrassed.
Well, me too.
I mean, it's just horrible.
Okay, liar, liar, pants on fire.
These guys are professional liars.
Yeah.
As I said to open the show, our government and big business have no trouble whatsoever lying to Americans. They just think it's their absolute duty to do this.
But my favorite part of that quote, though, man, is when she goes on to say, you know, so you can advise if we are going to piss off any of the U.S. authors.
Well, the other one, too, is they also said acceptance of ghostwriting, euphemistically termed, quote, editorial assistance, may be so widespread that it's considered normal. Well, I've seen surveys that 80% of the articles are. So let's put it in practical terms. I had a problem with arthritis caused by my Crohn's disease. It was so severe that I was in and out of a wheelchair. So my doctor said to me, you know, I've read all this stuff, the articles on Vioxx, and it looks like it's the best current solution. So I took Vioxx for just a couple of months, and I had less than that, and I complained it was making me ill. And about the time I considered going off it, it gave me a heart attack. So a few years later, I learned that the guy who conducted the test, Scott S. Rubens, who's now in jail for 10 years for fraud, for doing these fraudulent tests, created false reports, forged doctors' names to it, and I believe that the manufacturer knew full well, and they used these tests to not only have it approved, but then Celebrex, which is still being sold, coattailed the bigger test, which was the Vioxx test, and got itself produced. Now, when I read this long article by this lady on ghostwriting, it turns out that every article my doctor read on Vioxx was ghostwritten by the manufacturer's employees and by this company that we're now discussing called DreamWrite, or DesignWrite. So basically, I had a heart attack from a company who falsified all of its records on the test and then created ghostwriting falsified articles to support their falsified tests, and more than 100,000 Americans have died. Of course, Vioxx is very conservative. The company, which is Merck, I believe, said basically, oh, no, no more than 60,000 people died. Well, that's more than we killed in all of Vietnam. That's more than the soldiers who died in Vietnam. We only had 32,000 people killed on our highways last year, So twice as many people died from Vioxx as they did on the highways, according to them. And the reason their number is half of all the other numbers is because doctors are scared to death to put the true cause of death. If you work in a hospital and you say, this person died of a heart attack because of Vioxx, I can tell you the administrators of that hospital will stop you from publishing that and make you change the death certificate because they don't want to be witnesses in a malpractice case and they don't want to be cut off from financing from all these drug companies. Because remember, if you do it to one, you're blackballed by all.
And listen, to go back to what you're just saying. We have to be advised that we don't piss off any of the U.S. authors. You know, that's really what it's about. How are we going to advertise this? Let's just do an ad. It goes on then. It says, dozens of ghostwritten reviews and commentaries published in medical journals and supplements were used to promote unproven benefits and downplay the harms of menopausal hormone therapy. To cast raloxifene and other competing therapies in a negative light.
Uh-huh.
They're just out there selling a can of beans, you know, and you get to buy it. And I can't tell you how many doctors kept telling me, I need to go do hormones. And I kept saying, no, I don't. Oh, yeah, I just read the study. They'll quote it now, won't they, Manny? Quote this, and it's quoted from this.
Oh, yeah, I say it all the time. In fact, I was on a website reading an article about somebody who had views that were very similar to ours about genetically modified foods, and they quoted Arpide Preshtai, who we quote in our books, who's a scientist at the Rawit Institute in Scotland, who's one of the most renowned scientists in the world, and they say, and one of the guys who write in these comments on Boggs' posts for the drug company and the food company said, oh, you can't pay any attention to that. You know, Arpide Preshtai was fired from his job from being incompetent. Well, not only is that not true, it's a partial truth with a big lie. Yes, he was fired. You know why he was fired? Because Monsanto made a $220,000 donation to the Rawit Institute to fire him. They paid for his firing and got caught by the London Times, who then raised such a stink that they had to rehire him. And in the course of it, they discovered that all of this was done, including all these negative emails defaming him by a group called the Bivings Group in Washington, D.C., who is Monsanto's web advisor, who does all their dirty little hit tricks, along with CropLife, whose director is now part of the USDA. So there's this long history of reusing bad articles and reusing false information by the industry.
But the fact that the ghostwriters are in there mitigating the perceived risk of breast cancer associated with menopausal hormonal therapy.
Oh, but
defending
they do with
cardiovascular stuff. Benefits when there are none. Promoting off-label, unproven use of this particular drug, such as preventing dementia, Parkinson's, vision problems, wrinkles. These are things I hear right now from doctors.
Well, let's talk about food.
And it's a lie.
Remember the smart food label that these are smart foods for your children? And they got caught that the whole industry had basically funded this to disguise all the garbage in their food by putting a big, beautiful peer-grouped label on it that was false. So when they all got caught last November, they all had to abandon this little project for this smart label. So they'll just do anything. And, you know, basically the market message is going to spread through supplements. These are these separately bound publications they use in both food and in medicine that talk about supposedly peer group materials when, in fact, they're nothing more than a sales brochure, no better than the ones you buy at a Ford dealership. Oh, we make the greatest car in the world as the Pinto's blowing up in your backyard. You know, it's that kind of mentality. So, you know, basically, everything they do inserts a marketing message. Everything they write is intended to sell something. So when you see all these studies on TV, you just can't believe them. They're just not the truth anymore. So, and again, I want to go back to Dr. Dantini's comment that 25 years ago, these studies were financed, about 80 to 90% of them, by the National Institutes of Health, which gave grants to independent, objective scientists for reports. Now 90% of the basic reports and investigations and studies are financed by the drug and food industry, so we know they're going to say whatever they want. And worse than that, they get matching funds. So the big lie is paid 50-50 by the private companies and by the U.S. government. So This is why I say our government has no trouble lying to us, because every member of the FDA and USDA that works for the industry knows they're lying, and every scientist in the FDA who's the rank and file, hard-working guys every day, know their bosses are lying and can't do anything about it. Although they often complain to Congress, they have to be careful. And the only reason someone are fired is Congress issued a rule to the FDA and the USDA. If you fire someone who comes in and talks to us, we will yank all your funding. Or else they would hear nothing. The truth would be pushed even farther underneath.
And it's so sad to me. They had 14,000 cases that actually joined together of women who actually had breast cancer based on this lie. And, of course, nothing's done to the ghostwriters. Nothing is really, I don't know if anything's really done to the company. Has anything ever
done to anybody?
You know, I mean, it's sort of like the Vioxx doctor. It's, you know, he went to jail for 10 years. He kills 100,000. He's responsible for 100,000 deaths.
Yeah, the guy's a serial killer.
But part of it, too, though, Manny, is that they take the documents, they ghostwrite it, and then they have medical professionals come in and sign off on the ghostwriting. So they think, the medical professionals all think this is actual evidential things, when it actually isn't. This correct? Am I saying this correctly?
No, you're the same.
It's evidential. It's been proven. It's abstract. Here it is. You know, just sign on it. So these doctors are all signing on it. That's how they're getting some of these things approved. And then, you know, it actually isn't in existence.
Well, I want to point this out, too. One of the things in the study that comes up constantly is the fact that despite all this new information involving breast cancer and the effect of hormones, many, many doctors are still prescribing it because they're laboring under the perception that all of what they're saying is the results of decades of carefully found scientific information. But it's not. It's carefully orchestrated corporate influence on medical and food literature. So basically, doctors, markets, people who work for them, believe what the salesman comes in. I mean, Ash and I go into markets, ask questions, and we want to roll on the ground laughing. I feel like saying, did you memorize what the salesman said? You know, it's terrible.
I want to break in. This ghostwriting is bothering me a great deal.
It bothers me, Simon.
Well, you know, I generally don't have a big problem with the overall ghostwriting business. I know several people that are in it, but they don't play around with people's lives. You know, they're contracted to produce, you know, 20 articles about vinyl siding or, you know, some idiot subject. I can't believe that anyone I know would dare venture into, we can ghostwrite a whole bunch of crap about your drug. I mean, you got to have big cojones to do that.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, this is about money, Simon. A design right admitted they were paid $25,000 for each manuscript. Let me throw some dollars at you, okay? Secondary publication.
Each printing, right?
Right, each one. So articles that follow clinical trial reports are always called later analysis or secondary publications. Okay, well, design right was paid $20,000 each. In the 1997, the price later rose to $25,000. For abstracts of these things, these little paragraphs Ashley's talking about, they paid them $4,000 each. And in some cases, Design Right charged $10,000 for editing manuscripts and $2,000 for editing abstracts written by a different author or other agency. So basically, this is a cottage industry. So why are they doing this? Okay, they're getting paid. So let's talk about the medical profession. What's the state of the morality in the medical profession when doctors are selling themselves like the village whores to sign their names to reports they haven't done, written by ghostwriters from a drug company, which they know are totally partial biased towards the drug company, but yet for $25, $50, whatever $1,000 they're paid, they gladly put their name on in exchange for a check and then go off to the country club. So this is about greed and profit for doctors as much as it is the greed on the medical profession. And this is back to a subject we discuss in a lot of our literature about how medical schools are corrupted by drug companies who teach doctors to sell drugs. So then they go into business as doctors after spending all this time in medical school being groomed by the drug companies, and in business schools from Colgate to Harvard that are groomed by the food companies to sell their materials, and they come out completely prepared liars to go to work for major corporations who are hiring them to lie, and they know full well that six-figure job out of Harvard, you know, business school is being paid to them to lie in advance of food. So basically, we're educating a generation of professional liars in our professional school.
It's sickening. It's just sickening.
Yeah. So that's really what we're talking about, right, Simon?
Yes. Well, I mean, the truly bothersome thing here is that I'm sure that there's a lot of very smart young people who want to, you know, move into the medical profession, become a doctor. I mean, it is a fine, upstanding profession to get into. And yet, what I'm hearing is that maybe much of what they're being taught is not about the art of healing, but more about how to sell drugs.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think you punched it yesterday when you were talking about somebody you know that's on 50 drugs. Didn't you say he's on 50
yeah.
drugs?
A heart transplant.
Yeah.
Heart transplant, 50 drugs.
Without these type of patients, including kidney, liver, and other transplants, drug businesses would lose probably 25% of their sales. In fact, I believe 40% of the drugs prescribed in the United States are for seniors. I mean, that's disgusting. We talk about this in our books. It's called polypharma. What happens if somebody takes two or more drugs a day? 50 drugs a day, this guy's probably barely coherent.
And none of these drugs have been examined together. They've never been tested in the lab together, so who knows what's happening.
Worse yet, they're off-label uses in many cases. An off-label use, it goes something like this. Accutane was one that was designed for a variety of different things and then sold as an off-label use for acne, which caused a huge amount of lawsuits. So a lot of these articles are written to promote unproven off-label uses to encourage people to use them for, like, dementia, Parkinson's, visual impairment, and other things where there's no acceptable levels. This was done with children with psychedelic drugs. And then they do the worst thing in the world is they may find a competitor who has a better drug that actually treats the illness, so they write articles to raise questions about the safety and efficacy of their competitors. So basically lie and slam and backstab their competitors. So, you know, basically, all this is done for marketing.
I think one of the things that I would like to cover is the previous right here. One of the things that Wise created, the Ghostwriter Views and Commentary Truth 2, I want to read this list again. I just have to. It just bugs me. To mitigate perceived risk of hormone-associated breast cancer.
So in other words, what does that mean? That means they want to eliminate any information that would alert any potential buyer that Premarin and the Wyeth drugs created breast cancer, which is now proven. They knew this from the very beginning and lied about it.
Promote unproven off-label uses, including prevention of dementia, Parkinson's disease, and visual impairment.
So in other words, they wanted to sell it to people with dementia and Parkinson's disease, knowing full well it had no effect whatsoever on that illness, but, oh, what a great market. Let's sell it anyway.
Raise questions about the safety and efficacy of competing therapies, competitive messaging.
Well, we know what that is. Stab your competitor in the back.
There you go. Defend cardiovascular benefits despite the lack of benefits.
Yeah, well, there it says it all, right? You know, puff up that product. Oh, my Pinto has the safest gas tank in the world.
Physician, low-dose hormone therapy.
Selling to dementia patients is good business, because in the morning they won't remember.
Oh, I agree.
That's right. Hey, you know what? I can't tell you how many times I've heard, even from doctors right now, though, who are saying, hormones are real. That's the problem with the dementia. They're reading it from the Wyeth guys and the fact that they have this Design Right. Design Right did a great advertisement ad thing. They really did a great bang-up job, I have to tell you, for all their lies.
Yeah.
And they're continuing to do it.
Yeah, I mean, basically. So what we have here is an atmosphere that you can't believe what you read and you can't believe what you hear. So basically we come back to a bottom line issue, because we're going to come back this week after week. And, you know, basically the issue is you've got to read labels. You've got to do 1,000 things. And we're actually a little bit over our time. And I want to thank everybody for listening. We want you to join the food revolution. It's simple. Just read the labels and reject foods with addictive chemical ingredients like MSG, etc. Ask for free-range meat, preferably organic. Avoid genetically modified foods and genetically engineered vegetables. And vote with your checkbook. If you don't pay for it and you won't buy it, they'll stop stocking it. If you want to extend your life by an additional 10 years, consider changing your diet to organic. You don't have to suffer. Organic food's wonderful, and it won't cost you a lot if you shop carefully. And if you listen to our show this Saturday, Ashley has laid out costs of organic foods, compared them to regular ones, and compared the costs of organic foods in various different stores to show you how they're now trying to profit from that. And above all, remember, you can eat the same foods you're eating now, but if you make sure the ingredients are organic, just like your mother used to make, it will taste better than any processed or packaged food there is. So, Ashley, do you have any last comments?
To absolutely not believe the ghostwriters on the GMO that it's not harm, that it, you know, it won't harm you. It's linked to organ disruption in 19 different studies, again, recently. Countless studies prove that it's harmful. Don't buy into the ghostwriters.
In fact, next week on next Thursday's show, we have a guest, Barbara Peterson, who runs a site called Farm Wars, who's written a number of books like ourselves. And Monsanto is going to be our principal topic next week. So if you want to hear the true facts about Monsanto, the GMO foods, and the real tests they don't want you to hear about, come back and see us next Thursday or listen to us. So, Simon, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have done a little bit of ghostwriting. As soon as I get off this radio program, I'm going to dump all of those $20 an article deals about vinyl siding. I'm going straight to the medical profession.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks like it's a lot more money.
Unfortunately, you'd have to have your heart removed, Simon, because I think you have to be pretty heartless to have no morals in order to do what these people are doing. That's my opinion.
Oh, rants.
So you'd have to go have a heart removed.
Morality is certainly a lost art in our country right now, so that's not a problem for most people, especially as a younger generation. I mean, I don't know how they do it. How can you go to work for a company like that? I remember in the middle 60s when people like IBM offered all of us jobs and would look at them like, I'm not working for you. But yet this generation merely says, oh, I can buy a new BMW with it. And, I mean, it's disgusting. So, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, tune in next Thursday. Simon, you want to check us out of this?
This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. And I do hope that you'll join us on Saturday to listen in to our other program, Surviving the 21st Century. And we will be back same time next Thursday. And I do hope you'll join us then. Until next time, goodbye.